Now over to you. Are you fascinated on composites? Raise the hands. Oh, everyone is. That's cool. Okay, welcome to the party. İlkay Özgizoğlu today at the drum in Wembley, London, creating sustainable value with Composites Launch.
The future of composites is no longer coming. It's already here at the drum, Wembley, London, a stage built for breakthroughs.
December 2026 in London. 250 plus global leaders and decision makers, big ideas and real talk. Innovation, collaboration, transformation.
This is where change begins. From aerospace to automotive, marine to energy, every sector, every solution.
Engineers, designers, manufacturers, and researchers.
OEMs, Tier 1 suppliers, and industry leaders, all under one roof.
The Composites Launch is in the house, engaging the voices during the Composites 360 on tour. Free to attend, impossible to miss. ICS 2026, where the industry connects, collaborates, and accelerates.
İlkay Özgizoğlu, creating sustainable value with Composites 360 on tour at the International Composites Summit. Now available on LinkedIn, YouTube, and your preferred audio podcast app.
So wonderful. Good morning, dear International Composites Summit attendants, visitors, sponsors. Thank you for PRF for sponsoring this.
The hard work of composites teams should be shouted from the rooftops. We're on a mission to give your solutions better visibility and reach, to make them more widely known in the market and gain the appreciation they deserve. To make lightweight construction and specialized technologies available to end users, as well as attract projects, customers, and talent, join our Composites Lounge community. The Composites Lounge community is open to entrepreneurs, C-levels, specialists, and managers who want to create a better world with their innovative composites and play a key role in the success of their company. So if you're a hidden champion who isn't sure how to best promote your work, join a supportive and innovative community which is focused on making composites achievements visible to end users. The Composites Lounge community celebrates and promotes the best innovations, lightweight construction technologies, and sustainable solutions in the automotive, aviation, renewable energy, oil and gas industries, and many more. Get involved at compositeslounge.com.
We have now a contrast program, I have to say. Now it's a men-only panel here, but I promise you it is not a boring one. So, but first of all, congratulations, Marcy, on this fantastic association that you built up, and I'm looking forward that you will be putting women in composites also on the European market. So today we are a bit polarizing or provoking with a topic in automation. I know Gemma now for a couple of years. I went to ICS that was down at the Ibis in London, and since then we know each other. And this year I said to her, look, I would love to have a panel regarding automation or composites in general. And she said, okay, let's have one, but we will do it a bit spicy one. So thank you for attending this. And for you that are here at this second day, I would like to do this, I'm doing this on LinkedIn, very engaging. Who of you is actually from the automation. Okay, so automation industry. Hands up. Anyone here from automation other than these gentlemen? Okay, no. So we will engage you. So any questions you have, Just raise your hand and jump in, and we will discuss these questions with the gentleman here. And it can be provocative, it can be also polarizing, so let's make this really a hard discussion among us. So, the first round, I would like to ask you to introduce yourself, gentlemen. And also, please explain us your role, your company, and what fascinates you from composites or on composites.
Good afternoon. So I'm Tim Wybrow, probably a familiar face to many. I wear a few different hats. So I'm here officially for Seiki Robotics. So Seiki are a large format additive manufacturer. So large format additive printing and traditional CNC machining. And I wear another hat though, which is I'm also the chairman for Sampi UK and Ireland. So very much interested in the cutting edge, the innovation, the development in the wonderful world of composites. So my background has always been in composites and increasingly in innovation and development in composites. So for me, automation is one of the tools we are working to fill in the toolbox. It's not a panacea, it's not a perfect solution, it doesn't fit everything. There are plenty of applications where automation makes no sense at all. But hopefully today in our panel session we can challenge some of those ideas, challenge some of the areas that as an industry we've been focused on in recent years.
Mm-hmm. What's your fascination on composites? My composites?
My fascination, so I think probably like many, it's the novelty and the range of applications in which we can be working on. So I'm not tied to any particular industry or any particular application, but I've worked across many different sectors, and I love the diversity of product, technology, and applications that our sector takes us into. So we could be talking defense one moment, we can be talking about a piece of fairground equipment the next, and after that we might be looking at building the next supercar. So I love the challenges that come every day.
Spices of variety of life,
absolutely.
You say in the UK, right?
Absolutely it is.
Tom, how about you?
Hi, good afternoon everyone. My name is Tom Chastley. I'm business development manager for Airborne Composites and Automation. And I've been in composites for my whole career, so that's 15 years, which ages me. But we, at Airborne, again, I mean, it's going to be slightly boring because I'm going to agree with Tim here, that we know that automation doesn't fix everybody's problems. My comments today are going to be coming largely from an aerospace slant, because that's our main customer base. But we see things like huge increase in demand for structural components and not the workforce to make them. There's certainly growing faster than we have the people to build those jobs. So that's the big job to solve there. Knowing full well that composites and automation isn't the right solution for every component. My background is pre-rig. I worked for a pre-rig manufacturer from my beginning of my career and moved into automation about 4 years ago. And what got me into composites originally was something the panel previously mentioned about is how to get young women interested in composites. I just fell in love with moving vehicles, so cars, planes, boats, and composites felt that kind of a bridge to all those industries. So having pieces of cars and planes on my wall, that was how I got into it. And I had a pathway at university to do that as well through the composites course at Plymouth, which was the earliest composites devoted course, I think, earlier. So.
Which all the best people do.
I was that tall. Exactly, all the best people have.
So, my name is Andrew.
Okay, so my name is Nigel Robertson from AM Futures. I operate and represent Calcol here in the UK and Ireland. So we're a large format additive manufacturing. And for the last 10 years, I've sort of, when I came back from Australia, I sort of stumbled across the 3D printing industry and I fell in love with it. Not so much the technology, but the applications it solves. It's a wide range. And if you look at my career prior to additive manufacturing, I worked in automotive, rail, I worked in motorsports, I worked in marine, and it's literally a master of absolutely nothing. So additive manufacturing fits with me because it's so sector agnostic. And then how additive manufacturing can be used for the composite world and composite tooling, I think we're very much on that journey. Why do I love composites and what I fell out? Well, obviously, it comes back to motorsports, and it comes back to the love of motorsports and how that spearheaded the composites and how it's used in different technologies and in different worlds. And today, it gets used in so many different applications, but also it's such a specialist skill. You know, we talk about optimization, but actually there's so much skill level that's required, and especially when we talk about hyper cars and pushing the boundaries of composites. So that's why I love it. And I love all the different sectors that I'm blessed to work with.
I can really sense the passion you guys have for composites. That's cool. Now over to you. Are you fascinated on composites? Raise the hands. Oh, everyone is. That's cool. Okay, welcome to the party. Let me start with the first question. So Gemma was so nice and she had designed some of the questions. And the first question is actually for you, Tom. Because I sense already there is some polarizing opinions here, which I totally love. So you say there is automation place for everywhere, yeah, and so let's talk about the drivers. What drives automation in your view?
I mean, it's a fairly simple answer. I think that in aerospace, the what's driving automation is demand. So at the moment, Airbus has over 8,000 aircraft on their order book that they're trying to build backlog for. The future, the next single aisle aircraft wants to be made at 60 a month, I think. Right, 60 is the buzzword going around in aerospace. At the moment, put that into context, they make 6 A350 per month, and they're mostly making 30. So there's just a huge gap in what reality is at the minute and what is demanded, particularly for the future, particularly for the next single aisle aircraft. And that's just Airbus. The Infobo and the Marine and everyone else is the mix. You've got this huge demand and not enough people to make the components.
Tom, let me jump into this right away. 60 Airbus doesn't sound to me like many Airbus we're having here. Maybe that number of people. So Volkswagen, for example, they produce 500,000 Volkswagen Golf, and now you come with 60. We're talking 500,000. So where is the quantity? Where is the volume? Where is the mass in aerospace?
That is, from Airbus point of view, that is a huge forward. It doesn't touch the surface compared to automotive, which again, you've got many, a couple of orders of magnitude more per month. I think there's more vehicles made every month than aircraft that they're looking at. It's some random statistic I heard. But in terms of what we're trying to automate and get increased production base, it's not just increasing rates, it's improving quality as well.
It drives everything. And I probably agree with the guys here when they were talking earlier on. So demand-driven is one element, and the demand is then pushing where the direction is going for production. And it's not for everything, it's not the volumes that we're talking about for composites. It's the what sort of production environment is it going to be there. And is a cost or skill shortage that is actually pushing composites out of an option in a production environment? Because it's the one of the elements we have to solve the repeatability, we have to solve the how do we make it cheaper. And sometimes if it's a skills level shortage, then we have to look at optimization. And I think if composites, it's where composites grow, is it going to be affecting the cost and affecting the barriers to marketplace? Because it's very good at certain applications. It's very good at the hypercar environment where you've got low volumes. It's great in F1, it's great in aerospace, but in, again, in certain applications. So why is the cost prohibitive of then adopting it further going on? So we then start talking about additive manufacturing, which is what your question was. For me, the biggest blocker for additive manufacturing is the cost of the equipment, the cost of the machines. The skill level comes into it when we're talking about design for additive manufacturing. That's a massive factor. But what we want is machines that have that software, have that intelligence already written into it, that allows the adoption of additive components to be used, whichever technology that is, which is the large format, the powder bed, or the polymer paste. It is software that comes into it. If we then pull that back into the world of the console world, obviously we all talk about large format and we can all talk about tooling, but we then have to talk about CCE and how that affects the tooling, which then is the biggest value. And no one today offers proper large format tooling with CTE really taking consideration for that repeatability. Anyone who says that, do.
Just playing it.
It's not completely there first time now. It's working on them. And that's the great thing about automation and where it's pushing to. Right now, large format, the biggest thing in the console world is that it's the software element. And it's the producing tooling, knowing what the CTE levels are going to be, quickly, responsibly, into that time.
Let's move one more time to the audience. I have here from the University of Padua, Professor Marino Carissimin, and I had with him a chat yesterday also about the skills and the labor in composites. Do we have a microphone for a professor? Yeah? Do you want to take this one? Yeah?
There is another one, we'll find it.
Yeah. So I know Professor Carissimin from Composites United Switzerland, where we had an innovation day, and now he's started up a composites company, so it's a carve out of the university. Maybe the details don't matter so much, but the important part is how do you see, Professor, the skills gap in the future on composites? Are we walking more towards the software side, or do we also need to have manual skills and manual labor involved in the future?
The point is that the skills is a matter of all you can have a bio for composite. And the need of people is still a massive issue everywhere. Actually not only for us but there is a progressive increase of mentality in the dirt, and that is to really reach it up the level of a university, if you like. So in a few years, it also will be one of the companies. So we have the combination of little skills and the little people. So the main question I was getting the past year of the department was, how can we get good engineers? So guys, we don't have the board. So those guys are there, they're good, but they have limited numbers. So that's the point. If you add to that the fact that there is different level of requirements. Of course, you can move toward a more practical approach with manufacturing issues, and that is a real problem in the sense that even at that level, the kind of formation base that you are providing is a number of graduates must be there to lead. And rising the level of university, the case of composite, there are not that many courses dealing specifically with high skilled people, like we have one. And I was pushing a bit in that direction by myself, but still I was discussing with some colleagues. There is a course in Girona, which is only dedicated in composite. And there are a few examples around Europe, but not that specific. No. That's just that. So the point is, we need people, first of all, and we need people who prepare in that specific field.
Yeah. So how do you make for the students this attractive in the future, not only be in the software side, on the automation side, but also really work with the composite materials? We're talking resins, we are talking fibers, we are talking textiles.
But I believe that is a sort of message that should pass transversely, in the sense that people, I mean, I'm talking about the past experience, they've seen more as a fusion that are applying engineering courses because they are more assured that we find the job. What I'm really seeing is also pieces missing that the passion for the work they are doing. And so the idea is just to bring them to good example to good people, what we are trying to do is to bring people from companies into the classes. Just the colleagues, right? Bringing seminar, bringing a space of sports car, I have people from Adam Stoking, people who have big names, so people really motivate them, just put them, and they really enjoy what they do in terms of activities. And I believe that there's nothing that us companies that we really push your need of knowledge and enjoy what you do. So, that's important. That's more than the rest of the need of people, but that is simply going to change the problem. And the fact that in terms of they really enjoy what they do, the requirements of the activities, which is typically something which can be engineered as well, I would say more than one, they need that to us.
So I can feel your passion towards the composites industry. Thank you so much, Professor, for all your work in this composites industry. By the way, if you have a younger generation with you, students, you have a summer school in Padua every year, I guess? Every 2 years? Yeah, so join them. Tom, then let me ask you about universities, graduates, students, automation. How keen are they? I mean, we know the younger generation, Generation Z, now Generation Alpha comes. They have their, you know, strong opinion about how work goes. Anything that you can share with us? Any recommendations you have?
Not sure, it might be quite a meandering answer, but a monologue. I think the graduates we employed over the years, they've not been composites leading at all. They've been software engineers and electronics engineers. And then they get passion for composites afterwards because they see what we're building in the end.
Right.
There's not many pathways at university or institutions that meld those things together that say, okay, here's an electronics or software engineer, and what's the end goal? What's the point in the end, or the system that you're building and designing, or the software that you're writing? How on earth do you do that? I really don't know, because my leaning was material science, but I had no experience in programming or electronics.
Yeah.
It was a pathway that you chose. Yeah. I'll do materials down this pathway. The other guys do electronics down that way. There's nothing, no one did both. In my experience, and I think that's something that's just not about today at school to learn. It's not, we're such a broad church, but also we're very niche. So those two things kind of inspire, I guess, having people that know, there's no one that knows everything in composites.
So Tim, you being the UK and Ireland Sampi general manager representative here, now Sampi, as far as I know, is a representation of the academic institutions also.
No, academic and industry.
And industry.
Yep.
So are we walking into a skills gap and skills crisis with the new generation? And what are you going to do about it?
It's a great question, and I think I'd just echo Tom's point to some extent there. I mean, rewind back to my career in my early days, my university days, which even predates Tom's. There was no such thing as an automation degree. You know, if you wanted to go into... So I think what we're seeing today is we're seeing skills coming in from areas of work and areas of study that perhaps we would never have anticipated 15, 20 years ago. And we're seeing those skills coming into composite business and solve challenges we see in composite businesses, but they're not really the same traditional skill sets that, you know, as more experienced inverted commas members of the composite sector we would have relied upon. So software engineers, mechatronics engineers, mechanical engineers, these people have all suddenly got a home within the composite sector because they can all be solving problems for our spring and glue problems. And that, to my mind, that's a powerful offering. One of the great things I've always welcomed and really embraced is working with people from different sectors. So embracing experiences, embracing skill sets from outside of where I come from and the skill sets I've got. And I think that world, when you start bringing together different experiences and different backgrounds, you start generating new ideas, new innovation, new direction that perhaps otherwise you would have been a bit stale and stagnant in. And I think we are a traditional bunch in composites, and I think there are subsectors of our composite sector which are even more traditional. And what we're really trying to do now is to break into a whole new technology area or bring in a whole load of new technology areas where actually, as an industry, we're quite a traditional bunch. You tend to stick with what we know quite well. So I think the big challenge for us as a sector is still continuing to bring in those traditional, more fundamental material science, process, you know, tooling, design and engineering skills, but at the same time complement them with software, AI, mechatronics, electronics, you know, end effector design, you know, control loop circuits, etc., safety circuits. These are all skill sets and competency areas that as composite engineers we would never have known 20 years ago we would ever be working in.
Yeah, absolutely true. Now, I'm a dad of a Gen Z. My daughter, she's 28 years old, and she always introduces me to her friends and things like that. And Nigel, what I'm missing in our discussion is now the purpose discussion. So why are we doing this? And the younger generation always asks first, why? And what's the purpose of this? Do you experience these discussions yourself? And how do you want to deal with that in the future? Because particularly your 3D parts are so futuristic, yeah, and they are future driven.
Yeah, it's a subject that I feel so passionate about. This is the future, and then I have two messages when I talk in universities and schools and everything. So, first off, taking a step back and being an engineer. How great is it to be an engineer? And when I go to schools, I'll just say, if you want to go to space, if you want to be into medical, if you want to be a Lewis Hamilton going around the track at 1,000 miles an hour, you've got to be an engineer, because that's the heart of everything. Engineers solve problems. Now, one thing that the schools, unfortunately, I know there's some success stories, but there's also terrible. In the UK, it costs about £80,000 to take a child all the way through school.
£80,000
each child across the country. And one thing that we don't do very well is to what is the purpose of their life? And that is what careers are out there. Because we have this drive to get children and students to a point where they decide to go to university, they decide to do well in their exams, and it's all very generic. But what we're terrible at, as parents, as you know, inspiring students of what is out there. Now, I come, as you say, from a 3D printing background, and there's not many industries out there where little Sarah or little Johnny can be in their bedroom with their 3D printer manufacturing something at 8, 9, 10 years old, getting absolutely fascinated by it. And then that's their career. And they can turn that into a career, maybe not just in 3D printing, but solving problems. Now in the composites world, you don't have the option of doing composite manufacturing in your bedroom, unfortunately. And I think it's then about showing what's out there. I don't care what industry they go, whether they go into composites, whether they go there, but just inspire students into engineering, because that's where things get solved for the next generation. And that's where, you know, taking Tim's point, challenging the norm and saying, you know, look, the secret of life is one thing. The one thing, the one purpose that we have as engineers, as adults, as anybody, is gather information, take as much information, learn your entire life, and then pass it on to the next generation. We will do exactly the same and do it better. So when I say I'm talking, okay, I'm a boring old man now. Well, I used to be a young guy, fully enthusiastic about everything. But I'm a boring old guy now, but I want to pass on as much information. I want them to take that and then do the next best thing. And say, taking Tim's point of, you know, doing things better than what we've been doing. And that's what their challenge is.
Community, we have looked at why automation is required. We have some differing views on whether it's required on any case or in some cases. So some differing views there. We have now discussed the HR side, how to attract more talent into our industry. And what sparked me is indeed Gemma has also brought up the all-important question of innovation. So maybe I take the opportunity to also introduce myself. So I have an online community on LinkedIn called Composites Launch, and our three content pillars are innovation, technology, and sustainability. We've heard about sustainability now, a lot of stuff here with Chris Skinner and all these fantastic presentations and panels these days. We've discussed technology now, automation. Let's talk about innovation, if you allow. Now, the worry is the more we automate, the less innovation will take place. True or not? Nigel, I will start with you because I think you have the most innovative technology that is available on hand right now.
Absolutely not. It's an addition. It's a complementary. It's a way of, again, everything that we do, it automates. And it's taking it. Look at the additive industry, because it's evolving so fast. It's something that we should encourage, not stifle. We should, as you again, take the tips point. You know, it's something where we actually want to have people challenging the norm. And I think the automation thing will just keep on evolving and keep on getting better, and that will then open up new sectors where it's been restrictive in the past, and then their sectors will then have new demands, and it will keep on evolving.
Excellent. Tom, how do you ensure innovation management in your company?
It's always been boring. I agree with Nigel here. I don't think that it's like innovation at all. I mean, one of the tools Evans developed is
to make the software engineer's life easier, which is to automatically generate recipes. It's a step below the innovation stage. It's not, it doesn't affect the innovation at all. It takes the reply shapes and it converts them into a recipe for a robot to make. It doesn't, that's the innovative part for us. It's enabling the innovation of the design engineer who's thinking it apart. So, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, that's the that's very, very low down on it. It's just the priorities is to, you know, is to stifle innovation if you want to promote it. And, you know, just the like, we're not trying to automate people out of the day. We're just trying to give people the tools, their augmentation devices to help build the next generation of composite parts.
But yet, automation requires standard procedures, standard operation procedures. So there is a, say, a workforce that has an innovative idea. Is he hurt, or would you stay with the standard operating procedure? How do you deal with that? Do you have in your company?
No, 100%. We're a very small flat structure, so we have daily conversations with our CTO and CEO about what's going on, what the viewpoint is, and there's, you know, a software engineer and a salesperson has the chat all the time.
Okay.
Or what does the customer really need? What do they want? And to be honest with you, the innovation is driven is customer driven.
Oh, so it comes from the customer rather than from insight. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, we have to take on board what's comes back to what Tim said earlier about automation is a business case. No one's going to automate for the sake of it. There's no, if you can just hire more people and scale that, and that's your effective means of, and you can make money still, then that's okay. But the customers are looking for the, that has to be an X factor with automation that makes it better than the alternative. And that's where it is.
Okay. So, Tim, then, how long are you, Tim, in composites, if I may ask?
23 years.
Okay, so it's quite a long time. So year 2K, and after year 2K, all these things started. Because that is also one of the reasons why I went into composites all in, because in those years, composites was like the advanced material, the future of materials. Now, always consider that concrete, steel, aluminium are by far factors higher in volume than composites are. At that time, it was emerging. I mean, composites are there, of course, for the past 60 years, but so in year 2K, it's a really started jump, and that's the time when you really started this. And you remember, maybe there was an innovation spirit those years, RTM, autoclaves, and all these things.
There was, yes.
There was
a constant drive towards new. There was also a constant sense of companies not wanting to be left behind. So certain companies would innovate, and a lot of other companies would then follow very closely behind because no one wanted to be seen to be not as innovative as that front runner.
Very good. So you know the beginnings, and then I thought it's flattening. One of the reasons is the automotive industry. In Germany, at least, the automotive industry, they didn't pick up on the idea of composites in a large scale. Yeah. I was at a SMC BMC conference just the other day, organized by the AVK. And there was one part of Volkswagen that was the cabriolet, the convertible that has the bonnet in SMC, but other than that, there's not much in composites there. So there was a flattening. But I see also with all the communication that we are doing, the conferences like this, of course, help getting composites more into the awareness and the mind of the people. Let me ask you, Nigel, then, what do we require on skills to have these beginnings, these feelings of these beginnings, how the innovation came, come back to these times? How do we attract people, and how do we develop those skills that they become innovative again?
Let's just take a point then on the Volkswagen.
Yeah.
So I see composites as a problem solver, a technology that's a problem solver. But I think right now, where it is in its stable, as it were, is it needs that innovation to take it to the next level. Because, and I do fear that it's going to be in this niche, low volume state where that is always going to be used for composites. So the challenge and the innovation is making it a lot more sustainable. We heard this morning about waste management. And I think that's the carrot on the stick of how far it can go. And there are now high performance industries like cycling and so forth, where historically we've gone from a frame that's gone into a composite, and there's been a step change. Been brilliant. We're now starting to see in the world of high performance cycling, like the velodromes, it now going into a fully 3D printed metal frame, because composites doesn't actually give you that benefit of performance anymore. It gives you light weighting. It doesn't actually give you performance of taking power and inertia through the cycle frame. So right now, I think the composite world needs to have a good look at itself and really push for that innovation, and really then go to how do we do tooling more efficiently and effectively? How do we do the processing more? How do we automate more? Because otherwise it's going to be stuck in this innovation roadblock of other sectors and other factors going, it's not cost prohibitive anymore, there's other things that the other industries have done. And again, I think we're at a coming up to a junction if we don't do something different.
Yeah, Tim, coming back to you then. If an outsider would look onto composites, he would say, what's your problem? You are innovative like hell. You got RTM, you got autoclave, you got out of autoclave, you got high pressure, you got this and that. So what would you say? At which stage is the composites industry regards to innovation? Do we have TRL 1s and 2s and 3s? Or are we really at TRL 8, 9 and 10?
I think we've got technologies right across the board, but I think one of the things we're not very good at is reminding ourselves that actually there are other competing technologies and other industries which haven't sat still. You know, when we've been innovating for our wonderful trim and glue products and technologies, you know, we'd be foolish to think the metallics industries and the ceramics industries and the plastics industries have also just sat still and watched that innovation happen around them. They haven't. I mean, I've got a good example of this. I mean, I worked for one of the leading material suppliers. We developed a new material and a new product for an automotive application. Mm-hmm. A very high-end, very expensive automotive application. We were very pleased with ourselves. We developed this solution in less than a year, and we got it into the full automated manufacturing in a metal pressing factory in Germany. We were very pleased with ourselves. We came in, and in an hour, we made 6 parts, which, you know, for a large piece of visual quality carbon work was very impressive. In the same time frame, a team next to us of 6 engineers replaced 6 30-ton pressing tools, smashed out 1,000 aluminium bonnets, then changed the 6 tools again, all in the same hour. And there was us celebrating our 6 components. So I think we've got to be mindful and grounded. You know, what we're offering here still is a long way away from the sort of solutions that other material and process options offer. And I think to the point around the niche, at the moment, I think the idea that everything is just going to switch to black metal, that's gone. I think the business case isn't there for that. I think the pull isn't there from industry for that. And we are now back fighting for the applications that make sense. And what it doesn't make sense is to push technologies and applications into a sector where fundamentally the numbers just don't add up.
Glad you said that. Yeah. All right. We're coming slowly to the end of our discussion. One last point, going back to HR. There is this feeling that I'm sensing this from our discussion. We have spoken about the white collar working group here, the knowledge workers, but let's talk about blue collar, the shop floor people. Is there a division, be honest, between white collar, blue collar in your companies, in your environments, or do you think these are completely aligned and they work together very constructively? Any room for improvement, or do you think this is an ideal world right now?
Speaking from everyone from this automation point of view, we don't actually have a huge amount of blue-collar workers on the shop floor, so I will speak about client experiences at the core. Yes, there is a divide. I think in every company I've worked for, it's been present. Addressing it is always on the agendas of management and the supervisors, and everyone talks about it. And you just people mingling at lunchtime, you hear this intent and things like that. I think one of the early in my career, I remember I was doing the week on the shop floor as part of my graduate scheme, and I remember asking one of the old graders, do you know what you make? You remember now? I was like, do you know what it's for? Where it's used, where it goes. And I'd been at the company for a week, and I knew the answers to all of these questions. And I said, do you know what? What it ends up like? Well, it's just something, but now it's something to do with wind energy. And I just felt there was scope to evolve operators itself. Might sound patronizing, but just in a way, the same thing that gets other people interested in starting careers in composites is sustaining that with regular, you know, case studies and showing people. I think getting people out in the world as well. Like, shop floor workers don't get to come to conferences and hear what's going on in the world, because no one makes time for it, or has it. They've got a shift to run. And
I think, Gemma, this is food for thought, right? This is excellent. This is gold. Yeah.
I don't think that's just a power you need in fact. That's it if you're trying to run a factory. But maintaining the interest, I think, is really important.
Okay. Tim?
Yeah, I think I'd echo some of Tom's observations and points there. So I would say I've seen the same. I think it's got better. I think geography plays a difference. I think the sort of business and the sector you're in makes a difference. I remember starting work for an aerospace company, and I won't name them, but I was starting work for an aerospace company, and I was being mentored by somebody who'd worked in the business for 51 years. And I sat down with some of my new team for lunch, and some of those team members were technicians, and I got taken to one side afterwards. What on earth are you doing, sir? What are you doing? You don't sit with them, you sit over here with us.
Okay.
For me, this made no sense whatsoever, because I couldn't see the hierarchy. We were a load of people solving problems, making parts, making, you know, panels, whatever it was we were doing it together. So for me, you know, for me, it's been something I've tried very hard with in my career and also through SAMPI to break down those barriers and say, well, effectively, we all bring a different piece of the puzzle to the table. We all bring a different experience, a different viewpoint. And for me, the value is embracing all of those, not shutting half of those out because they come from the wrong background. So I would hope everybody in the room would also be of a similar mindset to say, well, those opinions, those views on the past that effectively it's an us and them, that belongs in the past.
Exactly. So over to you. What do you think? Is there a division between white and blue colors?
Well, my question is not about the blue colors, because we even experienced in the academia where the technician one team and the academic is one team. I had the same experience like you when I was among the technician, because I was designing the machine for all my time was in the workshop, but apparently I was supposed to be part of the academician. But my question is this, that we've been 2 days we're talking about composites, and all the focus is on glass fibers, carbon fibers. Are there any other alternatives, like natural fiber? None was mentioned, and also some people thought, what are the perspectives of natural fibers composites?
So first of all, I'm a fan of natural fibers, if I may start as a host, because natural fibers, they absorb CO2. So if you make it really clever, then your balance sheet is even better with natural fibers. But like we had today, this motorsport company, where I was surprised that they are using in a racing car, Formula E, flax or hemp fibers. But he explained that you don't need 3 grams lightweighting features, so they decided for the flax fibers or the biofibers. And also from Lufthansa Technik in Germany, they have, for example, biofibers in now the testing, although they know that biofibers have a variation in quality, and although it is more heavier or heavier than carbon fiber, there is a general trend towards sustainable production, and fibers, biofibers are certainly one means to that. But it will stay a mix for sure. And while we are talking about glass and carbon fibers, this is maybe also a problem of our industry. Beginning in the year 2000, everyone was on SMC, BMC, RTMs. This is glass and carbon. Now, lately, biofibers come up. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you. I mean, to me, they have a place. Probably just like automation, their place isn't everywhere. The application space is probably narrow at the moment, and probably like automation, our knowledge and understanding of when to apply them, when to use them, when to reach for them in that toolbox, that is probably the area which perhaps still needs a bit of work. So what I'm not a fan of is pushing a solution because it's fashionable.
Yeah.
And I think we have seen that. Yeah. And I think in the last 10 years, we've seen a lot of that.
That backfires, actually.
Companies, you know, yeah. Companies wanting to showcase and shout about how green and sustainable they are by doing a flax or a bio version of this, that, and the other. And you think, hang on a minute, but it makes no sense. When you dig below the surface, this makes no sense. So again, as part of a toolkit, as part of a set of materials and process technologies we can turn to, I think there's a lot of mileage in biomaterials. One of the areas that I know, you know, at least two of us on this panel have got a big play in here is tooling. I would like to see more sustainable materials, bio-derived materials and recyclable materials used in tooling. It's become what has historically been the unsexy part of composites. Who's with me in making tooling sexy again? Come on.
Yes. So we have only 2 more minutes and we take questions. Now it's your time. Any question, the more critical, the better. So thank you for your bio question. Here you go. Gemma, microphone to this gentleman, please.
So your last question was about white and blue color. So if you want to differentiate, if you want to know, based on my experience, I'm just commenting on this. In any company, whether there is a differentiation between white and blue color, it could be decided based on how they have an induction on those people. If they have induction for white people, white color or blue color in a separate batches, definitely there it is. That's one way of, I know we could differentiate that. If they are having all of them in a single batch, that's the best way of not differentiating them. And that is one. And the second point, what I have is about automation. I think 1 in 2 people in UK have the cancer, likely to get diagnosed by the cancer. And in terms of automation, I think this will get less exposed to the toxins coming out of the resins, which will have less exposed to the cancer, carcinogenic effects out of the resins. Having either we need to have automation so that the less number of people exposed to the resins, so that could be easily less cancerogenic effects on the people. If you have the completely bio-based composite, it will be further attenuated or reduced. That's what my comment is. Thanks.
Any comments from your side?
Just commenting on health and safety of composites. I know that the REACH program and the global farmer system is working to, essentially composites industry is in an epoxy
position.
We've got a big chapter coming up with several materials, theories using the hardness to get back. So companies are having to innovate a way around that to provide materials that don't cause the deficit of each property. So, I mean, that's certainly one angle against automation. Is the other tool used to avoid contact altogether. But I would temper that with, if you're running a robust workshop, a safe workshop, your PPE should be first line of defense in automating around health and safety. It's probably other things you can do before you get to that to make your operation a lot safer.
All right, so we have to leave now the stage because the next speakers are already in the waiting. Thank you so much for being part of this panel here today. For our LinkedIn community, I'm looking now straight into the camera. These gentlemen are all on LinkedIn. Anyone I'm tagging is on LinkedIn, so connect with each other. Please follow our Composites launch on LinkedIn. We will do extensive coverage in the next few weeks until we will meet Gemma and her innovation hub also at Jack World. They have, by the way, a Black Friday offer still going on, so talk to Gemma and her team if you want to be there. It was really a pleasure. Thank you so much for being part of our panel.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
How do we connect you with the stories within the composites and sustainable materials industry? We are on the ground to find the facts, and we examine big innovative ideas. To this end, we have launched the Composites Launch Engineering Talks. What is the Composites Launch Engineering Talks? That is abbreviated by CLET. The CLET is an online format where we are streaming live on LinkedIn, YouTube, and recording the panels for your favorite podcast station. Within the CLET, we are giving you a slot and your seat in a panel where we are talking about the entire value chain within the composites industry, from raw material to the end use. We have raw materials, substrates, and components supplying to OEMs covered in that panel discussion. From our online studios in Germany, we cover events and corporates from France, Italy, UK, Central Europe, and many more European regions. Stay informed, stay connected, stay inspired. Join us for creating sustainable value.
With Composites 360 on tour, Composites Lounge Engineering Talks, and Composites Lounge End User Panels hosted by Ilkay Özgüzoğlu. Weekly on LinkedIn, YouTube, and your preferred podcasts.